All right, welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive. We're diving into a super important part of legal protection this time, the Fifth Amendment's Double Jeopardy Clause.
Absolutely, a cornerstone of the American legal system.
We're zeroing in on a landmark Supreme Court case today, United States versus Jorn back in 1971.
A case with some real twists and turns.
Oh, yeah, get ready for some surprises.
Yeah.
This one's a must-know, especially for all you law students out there, because it really gets into when a person can be retried if a trial doesn't, well, wrap up neatly. We're talking mistrials and this really tricky concept of manifest necessity.
It gets right to the heart of what the Double Jeopardy Clause is all about, ensuring fairness and preventing the government from, you know, having unlimited bites at the apple. Jorn shows us where the line is, when a trial can be stopped early, and whether the prosecution can just hit the reset button.
Like, is it a do-over? Can they just try again?
Right, exactly. There has to be a good reason, a sense of finality to legal proceedings. The state can't just keep hammering away at a defendant.
Okay, so let's get into the weeds here. What exactly went down in the Jorn case? What was the whole deal?
So we've got Milton C. Jorn facing a whopping 25 counts under this section of the U.S. Code, 26 U.S.C. Section 7-2 or 6-2.
25 counts? That's a lot.
And this is serious stuff. This isn't some, whoops, I messed up my taxes situation. This statute is all about willfully helping someone cook the books, assisting in flat-out tax fraud. We're talking intent here.
Deliberate, not accidental.
Exactly. So Jorn's in court, the trial's going on, and the judge starts getting concerned about five taxpayer witnesses.
These are people Jorn supposedly helped, right?
Yeah, the people whose returns he allegedly helped make fraudulent, they were going to testify against him.
So their testimony would have been pretty damaging.
Oh, yeah, central to the government's whole case. Now, the thing is, these witnesses, they had already been warned about their rights, you know, the whole self-incrimination thing.
Like their Miranda rights. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
Yeah, exactly, but from IRS agents. But the judge, he wasn't so sure those warnings were enough. He was worried they might incriminate themselves on the stand, even accidentally.
I can see why a judge would be cautious there, wanting to protect people's rights. So what did he do?
And this is where it gets wild. He just upbrained and dismissed the jury, called a mistrial, just like that.
Whoa, really? Just like that?
No hung jury, no outside emergency, nothing like that. Just boom, mistrial. And get this, he didn't even ask Jorn about it, didn't get his consent.
Wow, that's a big move, especially without even looping in the defendant. So the trial just stopped. What happened next? Did the government try to pick up where they left off?
Oh, they absolutely did. They wanted to retry Jorn, but Jorn's lawyers, they were like, hold up, this is double jeopardy. You can't just try someone twice for the same crime.
Which, of course, is what the Fifth Amendment is all about, right?
All right, right. So now the big legal question becomes, can the prosecution just get a redo after a mistrial that the defendant didn't agree to and that wasn't caused by some huge unavoidable problem?
So it all boils down to, when is a mistrial actually justified? Like, what's a good enough reason to stop a trial in its tracks?
And the Supreme Court, they have this standard, this idea of manifest necessity. It comes from way back, an 1824 case, United States versus Perez. Basically, Perez says you can only have a retrial if the mistrial was truly necessary.
Like if the jury can't agree on a verdict.
A hung jury. Yeah, exactly. Something that just completely blocks the trial from moving forward fairly.
So manifest necessity isn't just like, oh, this is inconvenient or the judge prefers to do it this way. It's got to be a real unavoidable roadblock.
It has to be, yeah. A high bar to clear. And then in Jorn, they built on this idea and gave us a more concrete way to figure out if manifest necessity really exists. They came up with a three-part test.
Okay, break it down for us. What are those three big things the Supreme Court looks at?
All right, so the first part of the test is, did the trial judge use good judgment? Did he really think through other options before pulling the plug on the whole trial?
So it's not just about the decision. It's about how the judge reached that decision.
Exactly. Like, could he have maybe paused the trial for a bit, a continuance, and let those witnesses get their own lawyers? Which, by the way, that's what he ended up telling them to do anyway. But in Jorn's case, the court pointed out, the judge didn't even talk to the prosecution or the defense before dropping that mistrial bomb.
So, not exactly a collaborative approach.
Nope. Then the second part of the test, this gets right to the heart of it, was there really a manifest necessity to declare a mistrial in the first place?
Like, was it truly necessary to stop the trial right then and there?
Yep. And here, the court really dug into the judge's worries about those witnesses. They were like, hold on, these folks are already warned by the IRS. The judge's concern was more about what might happen down the line, not some immediate crisis that would make a fair trial impossible.
So it's not enough to just say, well, there's a chance of a problem. It has to be a clear and present danger to the trial's fairness.
You got it. And then the third part of the Jorn test looks at whether that mistrial messed with Jorn's right to have his case decided by the original jury. The court recognized that defendants have a huge interest in finishing their trial with the same jury they started with.
Makes sense. They've built their whole defense around those specific jurors, their strategy, everything. A mistrial kind of yanks the rug out from under them.
Totally. Imagine you're Jorn. You've geared up for this group of people to decide your fate. You've presented your case, and suddenly it's all thrown out the window.
So with those three factors in mind, how did the Supreme Court rule on Jorn's case?
The majority, led by Justice Harlan, they said, yeah, the judge overstepped here, big time. They slammed him for acting so quickly, for not even looking at any other options besides a full-blown mistrial. They said there was no manifest necessity, and that the worries about the witnesses, it was all a bit too hypothetical.
So they were skeptical of the judge's reasoning.
Big time. And lastly, they really highlighted how unfair it was to Jorn to have to go through another trial, all the stress and cost of it. That's exactly what the Double Jeopardy Clause is meant to prevent, that kind of burden on the defendant.
So Jorn wins, he can't be retried, case closed.
Yeah, the Supreme Court upheld the lower court's decision to dismiss the charges, but it wasn't a slam dunk. There were dissenting opinions. Justice Stewart, he argued that Jorn's rights weren't really violated here. He didn't see the mistrial as being unfair to Jorn, didn't think it rose to the level of a constitutional violation.
So different perspectives on what constitutes unfairness.
Exactly. And then you had Chief Justice Berger. He agreed with the majority, but he really hammered on the fact that it was the judge's mistake, the judge's bad call, that screwed things up for Jorn. In his view, it wasn't anything Jorn did wrong. It was the judge's actions that triggered the whole double jeopardy protection.
So even though they agreed on the outcome, they had slightly different reasons for getting there.
For sure, but that's what makes these cases so interesting, right? There are these nuances, these different lenses on the same set of facts.
Absolutely. Okay, so wrapping things up, what are the big takeaways from Jorn? Why is this case still so important all these years later?
Well, for anyone studying law, Jorn is a huge reminder that the defendant's rights are at the center of our legal system. Judges can't just declare a mistrial because it's Tuesday or they're feeling impatient.
Right. There has to be a really solid, compelling reason.
You got it. That high bar of manifest necessity is not just a suggestion. It means taking a hard look at the whole situation, trying to find any other way forward, and ultimately respecting the defendant's right to have their case heard and decided by the jury that was originally chosen.
So Jorn is all about drawing a line in the sand, saying, hey, a mistrial isn't a get-out-of-jail-free card for the prosecution. They can't just keep taking swings at a defendant unless there's a darn good reason for snapping the first trial.
Right. And that reason has to be about fairness, about making sure the trial can't continue in a just way, not just about convenience or procedural hiccups.
So, United States versus Jorn. It really clarifies when a mistrial can be declared and when it can't, and it puts the defendant's rights front and center. A vital case for understanding the limits of judicial power and the protection offered by the Double Jeopardy Clause.
Absolutely. A real landmark decision.
So for all you listeners out there, especially those future lawyers among us, I've got a thought to chew on. What if the judge in Jorn had actually taken his time, really explored other options before jumping to a mistrial? Would the outcome have been different? And what if those witnesses were in real, immediate danger of incriminating themselves? Like, it was a slam dunk, no doubt about a situation. How would that have changed things? These are the kinds of hypothetical scenarios that can really get you thinking deeply about how these legal principles play out.
And there's so much more to explore. We encourage everyone to dive into other cases that deal with double jeopardy, with judicial discretion, all these fascinating areas of law that are constantly evolving and shaping how our justice system works.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everybody. We'll be back soon to tackle another big legal issue. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.